I'm Lisa Mullins, and this is The World, a co-production of the BBC World Service, PRI, and WGBH in Boston. More than a billion people around the world are followers of Islam. Some in the West are uncomfortable with that fact. Many of them associate Islam with intolerance, with autocratic governments, and with the subjugation of women. But that is not what Islam means to Ali Alawi. Mr. Alawi served as Minister of Trade, of Defense, and of Finance in Iraq after the fall of Saddam Hussein. He's written a book called The Crisis of Islamic Civilization. It's being released today. In it, Mr. Alawi recalls growing up in Iraq in the 1950s in a Muslim world that seemed to be pulling away from the outward manifestations of Islam.
Women, not only in my family, but probably in all the urban middle classes, had stopped wearing traditional clothing. They stopped putting on the Islamic veil, Western clothes. Modernity in the form of various Western-style entertainments were taking over. The landscape, cityscape, was changed to reflect modern ways of living. So,
does this mean they were less religious?
Not less religious in the believing sense, but they were less committed to the outer norms and the outer rituals of Islam. For example, public prayers, Friday congregational prayers, were not held with the same degree of enthusiasm as you see nowadays. The Hajj, the annual pilgrimage to Mecca, was undertaken only by those who are extremely old.
It would be kind of an insurance policy. I'm going to be dying, so I better do the Hajj.
Yes, I mean, it was highly unlikely to find somebody younger, say, than 50 going on Hajj, which is not the situation now. At the same time, Islam as a political ideology was hardly on the radar screen at that point.
Okay, I want to talk obviously a lot more about this because this is the subject of your book, but you left Iraq when you were a teenager. How come?
That's right. Well, we had a revolution in 1958 which overthrew the kingdom of Iraq, and my family was involved in the monarchical regime. So we were sort of on the losing side of a coup d'etat, and as a result of the turmoil in the country, we were sent abroad to continue our education.
Where did you go?
I went to England at first.
And you went to MIT, you went to Harvard.
That's right, yeah.
You went back to Iraq after the fall of Saddam. When you went back, what did you detect about what was happening not only in Iraq, which may be a special case, but throughout the Muslim world that had radically changed the way Islam was practiced?
When I came back to Iraq, you could see that there has been a sea change. I mean, Islam erupted back onto the public arena in a very, very powerful way and began to affect the way that people conducted themselves, affected relationships between genders, affected relationships within families. And the state, which was in the past secularizing, modernizing, became in many ways more concerned about maintaining, as it were, the Islamic outer form.
Is what you have said right now, at least in the English language version of this book, to what extent has it been nourished by your own experience in the post-Saddam government of Iraq? Because as Minister of Trade and Minister of Defense, certainly you had to deal with Western governments. You had to deal with the United States. To what extent have you integrated what you learned, what you saw as the obstacles to communication with those governments in this book?
Well, I mean, what really prompted me to write this book is the huge gap between what people supposed to be or presumed to be Islamic ethics and the reality of what I saw.
Let me interrupt there. I mean, there are many examples that you give in the book, including seeing the Sunni versus Shia violence, much of the violence that you witnessed firsthand, which made a deep impression on you. Give us perhaps one other example that we could visualize that led you to see very vividly this dichotomy between the way Islam is supposed to be practiced according to the Quran and the way, in your view, it's been corrupted now.
Well, another example is corruption. I mean, the appalling levels of mismanagement of public resources, the huge amount of theft of public funds.
But does anybody justify that using the Quran?
No, they don't. But most of these people who ran Iraq are one way or another connected with Islamist parties and connected with parties that use Islam as an ideology.
Did you confront them?
Yes, in many cases.
We should say you do have enemies in Iraq.
Well, I hope not the kind of enemies that that I cannot reason with, but I'm sure there are people who feel that what I did, especially when I was Minister of Finance, were really dangerous to their ambitions. I mean, I exposed possibly the biggest theft of public assets anywhere in the world, the theft of the Ministry of Defense by its own staff of nearly $1.5 billion.
Was that justified by those who perpetrated it using Islam?
No, but some of the people who actually took advantage of it and benefited of it were stalwarts of the Islamic movement. They were stalwarts of Islamic political parties. Some of them used to give public lectures on ethics and morality and so on.
So to them you would say, or you did say what?
I said, don't, this is hypocrisy. You cannot use Islam in order to gain political power and convince people of your credentials, while what you are doing is really no different and often worse than the worst kind of corrupt dictatorships. And people don't like to hear that, because if you use a religion, as it were, as a basis for your political action, then what does that mean? That you have to abide by its ethical precepts. And if you don't, then not only do you put yourself in some kind of moral jeopardy, but you tarnish your religion in the process. And to present this as Islam, I think, does a huge disservice to the religion and to its civilizing potential.
Ali Alawi is the author of the book just released today, The Crisis of Islamic Civilization. Thanks for coming to the studio. Nice to speak with you.
Thank you, Lisa.